Hello, Eva.
Hi, Maini.
The aim of this program is to help you to become an active participant in conversation. Although you have a good knowledge of the vocabulary and the grammatical forms of English, you may find it difficult to use it in conversation.
So, what we are going to hear today is a little bit of many things that might turn up on a business trip. We'll hear what Mike reads during his long business flight to San Francisco, and how Emma is prepared for business visitors, and we'll also talk about hobbies and some interesting sights.
Let's take off then, shall we? With Carl and Michael, Emma will join us later on.
What's the book you're reading?
Well, it's a James Bond book. It's about the fantastic adventures of James Bond, Agent 007 of the British Secret Service.
But who reads James Bond these days? I didn't even know it's possible to read James Bond at all. Watching James Bond is easy enough, and imitating him is kind of fun, but reading him, well, apart from anything else, it sounds so un-Bondish.
You think so? And yet, he was born in a book, Casino Royale. It appeared in 1953. Fleming chose the name Bond because it was common and not something that stood out then. There were 13 more books to follow. The books have attracted many kinds of readers. For example, Diamonds Are Forever has been a favourite of the more sophisticated readers, while Dr. No has had a general appeal. President Kennedy, as you know, was a keen reader. Life magazine once listed 10 of his favourite books. And there it was. Number 9, a James Bond book, From Russia with Love.
I see. But that was the time of the Cold War back then. Bond was a creature of the Cold War, wasn't he?
Yeah, right. But there must be more to it, surely. Because James Bond didn't die with the fall of the Iron Curtain. In fact, he's very much alive in the public mind today.
Yes, indeed. That is most amazing. But who is the man behind these James Bond books? Fleming, you said.
Yeah, Ian Lancaster Fleming. He was born to Scottish parents in 1908. Educated at Eton, well, briefly, before he was thrown out, he travelled around until he became a reporter for Reuters news agency. Fleming lived like a man of the world, like James Bond. He loved big stakes gambling, driving fast cars, and women. But he died alone. His wife had left him, taking their son with her.
Anyway, he lived long enough to see his books become bestsellers, but not quite long enough to see the films take off. Emma, could you do me a favor, please?
Yes, of course. What would you like me to do?
A group of important clients is coming to visit our company, and I've arranged to meet them, and I was wondering if you could show them around.
Who? Me? But Robert's always done the visiting tours.
Yes, but now he is on sick leave, and I've got this board meeting, and
Oh, I see. What would you like me to do then?
The usual round, you know, and it might be a good idea to start with a current piece of news or impressive statistics, you know, to get the visitor's attention and arouse their interest, you know.
Anything else?
You know all the facts, don't you? Total production figures, for example?
Yes, I think so.
You could also mention that we have flexible working hours, which in our company means that we can come to work between 7 and 9 and leave between 3 and 5. And it might be worth pointing out that we have spent a great deal of money on research and marketing with good results.
Yes, all right. And?
Just remember to speak in a clear, strong voice. I mean, don't use too many complicated words. Keep it simple so that you're easy to understand and a pleasure to listen to, and the eye contact is important. try to make a personal and conversational presentation so that the visitors feel free to ask questions. As you know, the first impression counts. Well, it all depends on you now. Oh, yes, and one more thing. You could end your presentation with a joke or story or...
That's all very well, but I'm not good at telling jokes. Anyway, I'm not an entertainer. All I can do is be me, myself.
That's what I mean. Be genuine. Be yourself. You'll be fine. I'll leave it to you then. Thanks, Emma. What is your favorite thing? I mean, your hobby.
My favorite thing? Don't you know that I love pigs?
Pigs? Did you say pigs?
That's right. I collect pigs. Or, more to the point, I give them a good home. My home is now filled with tin pigs, porcelain pigs, beautifully carved wooden ones. I especially love those pigs that look like the real ones.
When did you start collecting these curly-tailed animals?
Well, 15 years ago. It all started out of sheer boredom. I had nothing else to do. Well, my grandparents were farmers, and they always had pigs and cows and all. I used to feed them and watch them grow. I developed some kind of attachment then, I suppose. I remember quite clearly that I always wanted to have a pig of my own, but I never had one. Having a pig in a townhouse was out of the question.
How did you find your first pig?
Well, I didn't go searching for my first pig. It was more a case of the pig finding me. It kind of called to me from a shop window. It was so appealing. Shortly after buying my first pig, I started to look out for more as I travelled around. Friends and relatives have also bought them for me. The thing is, I now have more than 400 pigs, ranging from doorstops to pen holders.
400? That's quite a collection.
Yeah, isn't it? There's this story about a man driving up a steep, narrow mountain road. A woman's driving along the same road. As they pass each other, the woman leans out of the window and shouts, "Pig!" The man immediately leans out of his window and shouts, "Stupid!" They both drive on, and, as the man rounds the next corner, he bumps into a pig, right there, in the middle of the road.
Jack, now that you're here in the Bay Area, how about doing some hiking in the Muir Woods, for instance? Have you seen redwoods or sequoias?
No, as a matter of fact, I haven't. I've seen a lot of pictures, though. I think it would be very interesting. Do you have any special equipment that you need to hike there, like trekking boots and walking sticks and rucksacks and so on?
No. No such things. I wasn't suggesting an Austrian or German type of hike. There are good paths. The main one's smooth enough even for the handicapped in wheelchairs. But of course, if you prefer a rougher terrain...
No. I just wanted to know. You know, somehow I thought the redwoods had been cut down ages ago.
Most of them were. Muir Woods was barely saved because the access there was so difficult that other forests were logged first. And by the time they got Muir Woods on their list, it had already been declared a national monument and made into a natural recreation area.
And when was that?
In 1908, to make a long story short.
Well, don't make it too short. I didn't know Americans were interested in nature conservation as early as that.
Well. The National Park of Yellowstone was founded as early as 1872, and Yosemite not far from here in 1890. We're not so bad as you seem to think. But of course, I have to admit that saving Muir Woods was a lucky strike, too. John Muir, for whom the park was named, was an idealist, philosopher, and scientist who was deeply interested in man's relationship to nature. He succeeded in winning public acceptance of conservation as an environmental ethic and managed to assure Congressman William Kent and his wife of the importance of keeping the area in as natural a condition as possible. That's how it all started.
So there was private enterprise behind this, too, in the end?
In a way, yes.
I see. So, when are we going?
What about tomorrow morning? We'll drive through Sausalito. You'll have the opportunity to see the Golden Gate, too, up to the Muir Woods Visitor Center. We'll first take the Ocean View Trail off the main road, and then the Lost Trail turn off on the left. Then we'll cross the Douglas Fir Forests and get into the Redwoods. Lost Trail ends at Fern Creek, which is one of my favorite places, not only because of the picnic area, but also because it looks so exceptionally lush and fresh compared with the other valleys.
A while ago, you mentioned the words redwood and sequoia. What's the difference?
The type of redwood we're going to see in Muir Woods is, in fact, called California Coastal Redwood, while the nearest sequoias can be seen in Yosemite National Park, which is too far away for us to go in one day. The latter are larger in diameter, and the oldest of them are as old as 3,200 years. The tallest sequoia, measured recently, was 311 feet high. Redwoods, again, are not older than about 2,000 years. They're thinner, too, but they can reach a height of 367.8 feet. Hey, Mike, would you be interested in trying one of these extreme sports? We sometimes treat our staff to one of those adventure trips as incentives.
Well, I've heard about those trips. They seem to be fairly popular, but I'm not really too familiar with the idea. I guess I'm not such an extreme type of person. What's it all about?
Anything and everything. It can be skydiving, glider flights, bungee jumping, whitewater rafting, mountain biking, indoor rock climbing, parasailing, paintball.
Hold your horses. That last one sounded less action-packed. I don't think I know what kind of ball game that is.
It hardly has anything in common with football or basketball, the all-American game. Paintball is a kind of simulation of a battle fought with guns with bullets filled with paint. Both teams have their own color so that you know when and if you've hit a member of the opposite side or been hit yourself.
Well, obviously, it's no indoor game, is it?
It can be, I think, but our version of it is to book a package tour, a weekend package, for instance. Then you go to the forest and hide behind the pines and boulders, hoping to observe your opponent before being observed yourself.
Kids' games.
You may call it that, but it's not as easy as it may sound. The terrain is not plain cornfields, so very soon you adopt the role of a gorilla with the sole purpose of staying alive.
And there must be people who are aggressive enough to enjoy that.
Well, if you prefer to call it aggressiveness, these trips are meant to give the group an opportunity to get to know each other better than what is possible in the office. Psychologists say that nothing unites people better than a shared experience of the feeling of danger. And nothing builds confidence stronger than successfully pushing the limits.
You sound like an advertising booklet.
No wonder. In fact, what I just said was a quote from the leaflet of the company we use. But I believe in it.
Yeah, why not? I was only kidding. I suppose that when you've plotted a team strategy and found it successful through victory in battle, although a fake one, you've already welded your team into a smoothly operating whole.
True, and vice versa. If you then don't win, it's not the end of the world. You can always tell yourself that, after all, it was only a game. Now you can relax and sit down around the campfire, talk over what went wrong, and promise the others to have a better strategy next time, which may well be an important business consultation. So, will you have a try? I was wondering if you'd like to join me for dinner tonight.
Yes, I'd love to. Thank you very much.
Well, then, I'll phone and make a reservation at the Grill restaurant. Is it okay with you?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't thinking of hamburgers or juicy steak sandwiches.
Oh, don't let the name fool you. It's the kind of restaurant, ties and jackets required for men and reservation necessary.
Oh, in that case...
Hello? The Grill restaurant? Well, could I make a reservation for two for tonight, please? Yes? Yes? Oh, about 8 o'clock? Yes? That's right. My name is Carl Week. That's right. Thank you very much. Okay. Fine.
Look, there's an outdoor garden. What a pleasant atmosphere. Ah, here's the menu. Let's see. For starters, I'll have a shrimp cocktail or maybe avocado with prawns. What would you like to have?
I think I'll start with the melon. For the main course, there's a wide selection of beef, poultry, and seafood. Rack of lamb would be nice if it's roasted to perfection and carved table size. How about this? Orange beef. Or duckling with fresh strawberry sauce.
Well, I'd like salmon served on a bed of lentils and fresh herbs, or perhaps chicken with mushroom and lemon herb wine sauce.
Desserts? Cheesecake, cherry trifle with whipped cream, or what is this blackberry fool? Let's ask the waiter. Could you catch his eye? Ah, here he comes.
Hey, Michael. What was it like? I mean, the meeting and all.
Great. It was both business and pleasure, as it happens. I've got some photos. Here. Have a look.
So, you had time to look around and see places. What is this place, anyway?
Oh, a small seaside town in California, 125 miles south of San Francisco. Its official name is Carmel by the Sea, but it's usually called Carmel.
Strawberry fields and apple gardens, streets lined with trees and small houses. You have chosen your spots carefully. Because I see no hot dog stands, no advertisements.
That's because there aren't any. What I'm trying to say is that Carmel is something special. There are no hot dog stands, no neon signs, no billboards. People want to keep the town rural and simple, beautiful and charming. Carmel was founded by artists, you see. The 1908 San Francisco earthquake left many artists homeless. And they looked for a new place to settle in.
Well, you don't have to be an artist to see the natural beauty of this place.
Well, for many years, Carmel had no paved streets, no gas, no electricity service, no jail.
An American town with no jail?
The fact is, Carmel still has no jail. Nor does it have street lights, sidewalks, or street numbers in residential areas.
But no street numbers? I wonder... That must be the mailman's nightmare.
There is no mail delivery. People have to collect mail from the post office. Well, what we're talking about here is a city measuring just 1 square mile. Guess what? Clint Eastwood lives here, in this house, by the ocean.
The Clint Eastwood?
Yeah. We were having lunch in this restaurant, this picture here, when he walked in. I couldn't believe my eyes, but there he was. Just like in the movies. Well, not quite. You see, in the movies, he's a man of very few words. Now he was talking to people. And guess what? He even came to talk to us. He asked if we found the food and service okay. Can you believe it?
Well, to tell the truth, I find it hard to believe. Why would he come to talk to you?
Why wouldn't he? He owns the place, and he is one of the locals. People came to know Clint Eastwood as the man of his word during his 2-year term as mayor. They were pleased when he bought the historic Mission Ranch house on the Carmel River. There was a danger that the old ranch would be torn down and replaced by new houses.
Who is that fisherman in this picture? Here. It looks a bit like Tom Cruise.
Well, that's me, actually.
Thank you, Emma and Mikael. Thank you, Carl. Glad you could join us today.
Yes, it was a pleasure to listen to you. Thank you so much for coming. Our listeners are probably able to take part in real-life conversation with a certain amount of ease by now.